This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
What is up, Straight Fire fam? It's me, Jason McIntyre. This is Straight Fire for Wednesday, December 1st. Unbelievable. We got to December here. A great month for sports. Obviously, there's a lot happening, and hell, Tuesday night was crazy in the sports world. Oh my goodness. Number one Duke going down. I know we don't do a lot of college hoops in the regular season. Obviously, we load up in March, but I am watching college hoops. I am gambling on it. And an awesome cover and comeback by Ohio State. Duke just choked down the stretch. They led by 8, I think, with like 4.5 left. They led by 15 in the second half and then blew it at Ohio State. Nice win for the Buckeyes. But I don't even think they were the biggest story in sports last night because of the Phoenix Suns Golden State Warriors game, which I stayed up late last night for. I'll get to that in a moment, but first I want to tease our interview today. I got so fired up talking about college football the last couple days, I decided let's get a guest. We got Dan Wolkin of USA Today Sports. I got to be honest, like, I've known Dan for a while. He said some stuff that really made me think. For starters, there is a nightmare scenario that I hadn't really considered for the college football playoff, where my Cincinnati Bearcats, the team I've been hyping up on this podcast for months, gets left out. If Alabama wins, they're obviously getting in. Georgia's obviously automatically in. And then what happens if Michigan wins, they're double-digit favorites, and Oklahoma State wins? Is Cincinnati going to get shafted? So we dive into that. A lot of Brian Kelly stuff. I didn't realize Brian Kelly was such a jerk. We'll get to that also. And the Lincoln Riley USC stuff. Really exciting week in college football. I mean, maybe it was a 72-hour thing, but it's becoming NBA-ish in the topic. So you guys will enjoy that that chat with Dan Wolkin. But I got to quickly touch on, before we get to him, this Warriors-Suns game. Now, we don't do a lot of regular season NBA. You guys know why. Come on, there's 82 games. But when you have the number one team in the league, Golden State Warriors, best record, best draw, everybody loves Curry. He's the MVP so far. Facing off with a team that had won 16 in a row, I mean, it's must-see TV. So they play, and at halftime, you know, Steph Curry's playing. He had a rough game. He was terrible. But Devin Booker's ruled out with a hamstring, and you're like, ah, jeez. No way the Suns pulled this off. Well, they rode the big guy, DeAndre Ayton, and oh, man, they got it. 17 wins in a row. The Phoenix Suns, 18-3, tied with Golden State now for the best record in the league. I mean, 17 wins in a row. Now, I always like to do, where are we 21 games in compared to, say, the NFL? Well, it just so happens that 21 is roughly one-fourth of the way through the season. So this is the equivalent of the Suns being 18-3. This is the equivalent of starting 4-0 in the NFL, right? Arizona Cardinals start 4-0, right? And winning 17 straight, though, is not something you see a lot in the NBA. Suns are utterly dominant at both ends. I loved, and you guys know I'm in the tank for Steph Curry, obviously. I love the strategy they played on him. They stayed down. They stayed home. They were willing to concede anything. Draymond Green wanted nothing. I mean, they're giving him any three-point shot. Remember when he was hitting threes in Game 7 against the Cavs? Feels like forever ago. I mean, it was, I guess, 5 years. But basically, they just locked down on Curry, gave him nothing. He was 4-for-21 shooting. The MVP had a rough night, 12 points. But they were in it until deep in the fourth quarter. Just too much, 8-24-11. And, you know, this is one of those games where it's like, oh, you guys didn't want to pay 8 in the max. Okay. That's one of the big takeaways. The other is winning without Booker. I'm stunned. Cam Johnson was very good. And the other one is, I just wonder if this is a taste of what's going to happen to the Warriors in the playoffs. They've got an incredible game, right? We know their pace and space, Curry threes, Jordan Poole here, Otto Porter there, Draymond passing. He had 5 assists, 11 rebounds. But if you have a big man like Ayton, can you kind of have your way inside with Golden State? And it's an interesting thought because Anthony Davis is in the West, DeAndre Ayton, obviously. Nikola Jokic is a decent player in the West, although, you know, Nuggets look like they may have an uphill climb to the playoffs at this rate with the injuries. Michael Porter Jr. now done for the season, it seems like, with a back surgery. Rudy Gobert in Utah, obviously not a huge offensive threat. But you just wonder about some of these bigs, Karl-Anthony Towns, There are some good ones in the West. I don't know. I'm not going to panic over one Golden State Warriors loss. I mean, they still have the greatest point differential in the league by a mile. Golden State's awesome. Steph Curry had a rough game, and Ayton bullied him inside. But James Wiseman's coming back. Klay Thompson's coming back soon. All right, that's enough on a Tuesday night NBA regular season game in December. And actually, it was in November. Today is December. But I do have some really good news to report before we get to Dan Wolkin on the pod. So, listen, I'm not one of these toot my own horn guys when it comes to the podcast and bragging about all the great stuff we do here. You guys know I'm not even one of those guys who's out here saying subscribe, rate, and review all the time. You know, they tried to drill it into my head at the beginning. Jason, you got to do this. I'm like, come on, man. We've got our audience. It's going to grow. They're going to share it with their friends. They're going to, you know, go to the comment section and say everything nice. Well, Rob G sent me our numbers for October and November, now that November's complete, although there'll be some late numbers coming in for November. But we started the pod in August 2020, right? So our first football season was 2020. October, last October to this October, we're up 14%. And November to November, we're up 28%. So the podcast continues to grow. Thank you for listening and subscribing, rating, reviewing, sharing with your friends, and blah, 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 blah. And the more listens we get, the more ads we get, the more podcasts we get, the better guests we get. It's all a trickle down. You guys win and everything. And thank you for that as we head into December. All right, without further ado, let's get to our guest, USA Today Sports, Dan Wolkin.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
You know a guy.
Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome back to Straight Fire a guy he's been here before, USA Today, Dan Wolkin. Listen, college football's on fire right now. And I said to Dan, what a fun week in college football. I would say it's been the most fun week of the year, without question, like not even close. And Dan, would you agree with that assessment?
Well, it's been crazy. And for someone in my position who's trying to follow all this stuff and react to everything that's going on, it's a lot. It's a lot to it's like whiplash. You know, you think, oh my God, Lincoln Riley to USC, this is insane. And then the next day, literally Brian Kelly to LSU. And then meanwhile, you've got the playoff stuff. So this is the time of year where things are always a little bit manic, but the fact that you've had these two major coaching moves back to back, it just ramps everything up times 20.
Yeah, I actually said something people didn't like at the college football, you know, media message board guys. That college football, the games have been fine, but the subplots with the coaching moves have been like NBA-ish. I mean, this is so huge. Like, nobody saw Brian Kelly coming. Nobody saw Lincoln Riley coming. If you had asked a week ago, would either of those change? There's no way anybody had that. I just wonder, has this overshadowed championship weekend, which doesn't have a marquee game with a spread of three or less?
I would say yes in some ways. Now, look, I think Saturday, once you get to the championship games, people are going to lock in on those because you have huge playoff implications in the SEC, in the Big Ten, the Big 12. So those are really, really important. And I think there's great storylines. But, yeah, for this week, it just feels like total chaos. Like the carousel is spinning out of control and we're just seeing these moves that we don't usually see. And there's not any patience anymore. When the season started, nobody would have said Dan Mullen's on the hot seat, you know? and usually if Florida fires a coach, it's a huge deal. And this year it's like, they hire Billy Napier and it's off the radar in 5 minutes. Yeah. That's how crazy this thing is right now.
All right, we'll get to the championship weekend games and the playoff and all that, but I need to start with Brian Kelly because, I mean, I've got a friend who's a Notre Dame booster and close to the program, and when I saw the whole Yeah, but people are going to make a run at Brian Kelly. You know, I asked him, and he's like, no, nobody expects him to leave. And for him to leave, I want you to put yourself, Dan, in Brian Kelly's head. He's been at Notre Dame for over a decade. He's 60 years old. What do you think prompted this? There has to be something that he saw, whether it was Mel Tucker's move, the shifting landscape in college football. I don't know, the $15 million a year, whatever he's rumored to get. But how, where did this come from?
Yeah, there's no doubt contract envy will play a part in a lot of this. When you start to see a guy like Mel Tucker, who I think is a great coach, has done a good job, but he's getting $10 million a year. I mean, Brian Kelly's way more accomplished of a coach than Mel Tucker. So he's, I'm sure, looking at that and thinking, well, if that's what he's worth, what am I worth? But look, I think the other thing, and I just wrote this in a column that should be up at USA Today by the time people listen to this, is that the playoff era has kind of changed how we perceive schools that can win national championships. You know, back in the 80s and 90s, a lot of schools won titles. You had a Colorado, you had a Georgia Tech that won a national title, a BYU won it in 1984. Mm. And the reason is because these teams, basically, if you were the last one standing undefeated in your conference, you go to your bowl game and you win that. And sometimes you didn't even have to play anyone who was that good. When BYU won the national title, they played a 6-6 Michigan team in the Holiday Bowl, and that was it. And they were undefeated and they got voted national champion. Doesn't work that way anymore. Now, not only do you have to win your conference, which the conferences include more good teams because there are fewer conferences, but then you get to the playoff and you've got to win two games against other elite teams. And what you see with Notre Dame, and I think Notre Dame can still win a national championship, but you've seen them get to the playoff, and what happens? They just don't have enough depth of talent on both sides of the ball that you have at Clemson, that you have at Alabama. I think the same thing's happened with Oklahoma. When they've gotten into those games in the playoffs, they're just a half step below. And so Brian Kelly's going to one of those handful of blue blood programs at LSU where it's actually easier to assemble that kind of team and that depth of talent, much easier than at Notre Dame for a lot of different reasons. And so even though he had one of the incredible jobs in all of college football, he actually went to a place where he'll have a better shot of winning a national title.
Yeah. So, okay. So when Mel Tucker gets his $95 million, and best I can tell, he's never won a real bowl game, right? I mean,
he's been a head coach for 3 years.
I mean, is that a little obscene? Why did Michigan State have to go so big? Because they thought LSU was going to come after Mel Tucker?
Yeah. And actually, I'm pretty sure LSU was going to go after Mel Tucker. I think LSU, you know, from what I had heard, I think their president really liked Mel Tucker and thought that was a good fit. I think it would have been a good fit as well. He's been in the SEC, worked under Nick, worked under Kirby. He knows what that looks like. He knows what it's supposed to be. But heck, if you're going to get $9.5 million to stay at Michigan State, and he's kind of the king there right now, he's so popular. By the way, if he wants to ever leave, it only costs him a couple million dollars to get out of that contract.
The buyout, so, right? Yeah.
It's so one-sided. The coaches get the $95 million all guaranteed, but if they want to leave for another job, it costs them almost nothing. So, you know, maybe he's going to wait for Alabama to open, you know, whenever Nick retires or something like that, you know? So yeah, I guess for Mel Tucker, it's a pretty good deal, but these schools just feel like to keep a coach or to get a coach, that's what they have to pay now.
Yeah. It almost sounded, Dan, like you just said that there really isn't a path to a national championship if you're Notre Dame, given the restrictions on who can get into the university. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
well, look, I think it can be done, but it's harder. It's harder than LSU, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, a few others. You know, there's not many, there's maybe 10, but those 10 schools are closer proximity to talent. They have fewer restrictions. They have fewer sort of roadblocks within the university to football success. And Notre Dame is still one of those places that believes that football and the institutional core mission can coexist, and they make football players, just as an example, freshman football players at Notre Dame, they don't live in a special dorm or live with each other. They have to live among the general student population and room with a regular student because Notre Dame wants its football team to be integrated fully into the campus community and culture. At Clemson, just as an example, literally the football players spend 90% of their time in the football building. So that's kind of what the difference is really between a Notre Dame and some of those other schools.
Wow. All right. So Oklahoma had made three straight playoffs, and all I heard was, how many wins does Lincoln Riley have in the playoff? And it's like, I mean, really, getting there is not good enough. But what do you think led him to bolt Oklahoma? It's seemingly in, I don't want to say the middle of the night, but I mean, Dan, a week ago, I don't think anybody thought that Lincoln Riley was on USC's radar. Remember, it was all James Franklin and, you know, there's a Pete Carroll, maybe leave Seattle. But Lincoln Riley was not really in the mix, right? Until what? The loss to Oklahoma State?
Yeah, I think some of those same types of issues as far as getting to the playoff and bumping your head up against the ceiling. Oklahoma, they primarily recruit in Texas and they went and got some players from other places in around the country. But I do think there's something to the notion that when you recruit primarily in the state of Texas, you are going to have a harder time getting great athletes on defense. On offense, very easy, but all the kids in Texas play on offense, all the really good kids. Yeah. And so when that's your recruiting territory and your base, that probably explains why just on defense, they've just been fractionally not good enough to win a national championship. The other thing is, they're going to the SEC, and I don't know that Lincoln Riley was necessarily in love with the idea, because Oklahoma for generations has been the best program in whatever conference essentially they've played in. And in the Big 12, you have to be better than Texas, which isn't that hard to do. You know, you have to be
especially better, not now.
You have to be better than Oklahoma State, better than Baylor. You know, Oklahoma can do that in their sleep, and they've done it. They've won championship after championship after championship. Well, now they're going to be going to a league where you got to be better than Texas and then Texas A&M and Alabama and LSU and Georgia and Auburn and Florida and on and on. It's hard. That Oklahoma job got much, much harder. And there's no way that Lincoln Riley, who was 55-10 his first 5 years at Oklahoma, was going to have anywhere close to that record in the SEC. So I think it totally makes sense from his perspective to look at that and say, all right, I'm going to go to USC, where frankly, the setup is kind of like Oklahoma, where we're the best program. We should be getting the best players. We can dominate our region of the country and get into the playoff if we're doing this job the right way, and we can still win a national championship there. So I think that's really how he looked at it.
Yeah. Now, one other job that, you know, a month ago, UCLA and Chip Kelly appeared to be on a collision course to end things. Depending on who you talk to, a lot of boosters out here, including a certain guy who got the Olympics out to LA, they were done with Chip Kelly. They want to move on from him. I don't know. What do you think happens with Chip Kelly and UCLA now, Dan?
I think it's a bad year for a school like UCLA to try to hire a coach. I mean, I just think that's the reality of it because, look, the Chip thing has not worked out the way a lot of people thought it would. I don't know exactly what the reasons are for that. I'm sure there's some obvious ones and maybe some less obvious ones. There are definitely issues and flaws with the UCLA job. I think it's harder. It's a much harder job than USC. And I don't think the kids in Southern California view UCLA football-wise as the best program. Those kids want to go to USC. Mm-hmm. They're also increasingly leaving and going east and going to the South. So that's a problem. But I just think with the amount of money they owe Chip and some of those other things and the other jobs that were open, you're just better off waiting till next year. And then maybe, you know, they're the best job on the market or one of the best jobs on the market where they might have an easier time getting a good candidate. Right now, I just don't think UCLA is in a good position to draw a great candidate.
So you think they'll end up keeping him probably, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point, it would be a big surprise if they let go of Chip Kelly.
One more coach thing, and, you know, the Urban Meyer situation in Jacksonville, I was way wrong. I thought he would be successful there with Trevor Lawrence, and it has been an unmitigated disaster. His press conferences now, Dan, are embarrassing, where he's kicking the can down the road on questions about the team to positional coaches. And you know, what's going on? Any read on Urban Meyer and if he puts his name in the hat for anything, whether it be UCLA, I can't imagine that, or Notre Dame, it doesn't sound like it. But any guesses on Urban Meyer?
I think Urban's kind of stuck because, first of all, he's not going to take a job in college where you can't win a national title. He's not going to take one of the, you know, sort of middle class programs and try to make it great. That's just not for him at this point in his career. But I don't think any of the really great blue blood programs would touch him, because not just the scandals and the drama that follows him everywhere, not even necessarily the lap dance video and all that, which is embarrassing. It's just kind of a combination of everything. He's just high maintenance, high drama. And yeah, he's got a track record of winning, but I think these schools just don't want to deal with him anymore. I think they're just
really,
I think they're just over him.
That surprised me. Mel Tucker getting 95 mil and some blue bloods are maybe afraid. Ole Miss is not a blue blood, but they got Lane Kiffin and what are they? They're top 10 team now.
Sure. But you know, Lane's a handful. There's no doubt about it, but I mean, just look throughout his whole career. Urban's the kind of guy who, you know, just burns really hot for the first few years and can maybe get you to a level, but then it just all falls apart. You know, because part of Urban's problem is, first of all, he's crazy and he just drives everybody insane around him, but he surrounds himself with these lackeys and, you know, I mean, some of these people that he had with him at Ohio State, I mean, Zach Smith, that guy, and you know, some of these characters that have just kind of glommed onto him over the years, they're bad news. And it just doesn't create like a stable environment. I think Ohio State, they're way better off from every angle with Ryan Day than they were with Urban Meyer.
Well, it's funny. Some of the stuff you were saying just now to describe Urban all kind of reminds me of Jim Harbaugh, right? Runs hot. And then it peters out, and then he's out, he bounces. And it's weird because everybody wanted him gone. Everybody said, oh, he can't win the big game. He's garbage. Pay cut, you know. And here we are, Jim Harbaugh, on the cusp of going to the playoff, double-digit favorite against Iowa. I mean, is there something to be said for Michigan staying the course despite all the noise? Like, every single Michigan booster and fan wanted him gone, right?
People thought he was done, no doubt about it. But I think Michigan is one of those places where, yeah, they want to win, and it's very important to be good at football there. But there is maybe a little bit more perspective institutionally about where football fits at Michigan than a lot of these other schools. And so I do think they're more apt to be patient and to give him time, especially like, you can think what you want about Jim Harbaugh, but he's a good coach.
Yeah.
You don't do what he did at Stanford and then in the NFL and even in Michigan. Like, last year was undeniably terrible with COVID and all that stuff, but he'd gotten pretty close to the playoff a couple times, been to a couple New Year's Six bowl games, a lot of finishes in the top 20. I mean, this was not like a broken disaster program. It just maybe wasn't quite meeting the highest of expectations. So I think Michigan just said, we can't get somebody better than Jim Harbaugh. Yeah. So let's give him a chance to fix it. And if he can't, then we'll make that decision when we have to. And guess what? He fixed it. He made some changes. He went back to playing the kind of style of football, physical up front and run the ball and just kind of physically mash you. That's what they did at Stanford and it worked. And they've kind of gone back to that at Michigan. They're not throwing it 50 times a game. They kind of started doing that for a while, running the spread and with quarterbacks who are not that good. And like, they just kind of have an identity. They're playing to it. They're executing it well. And I mean, that was just super impressive what they did against Ohio State. And they have a good chance to play for a national title. I mean, you beat Iowa and then either Oklahoma State or Cincinnati, like, they're going to be favored in that game too. Play for a national title. I mean, that's what he, That has to fulfill every expectation that you had about Harbaugh.
I have a bad feeling that it's going to be a similar situation to Oklahoma and Notre Dame in the playoff for Michigan, but I digress. Let me just quickly, one more coach thing. So as you're talking about Harbaugh and these coaches, I just looked up Kirby Smart. And Dan, if Georgia loses this weekend, and then loses in the first round of the playoff. And by the way, they're not a great offensive team, so that's not out of the realm. I do wonder, are Georgia fans going to be like, man, this guy Kirby Smart can't win the big game. We're always right there. I don't know, Dan. What do you think? Like, I'm not saying he's on the hot seat at all,
no.
But Kirby Smart, are there going to be questions if they happen to lose to Alabama this weekend?
Listen, there's no doubt that as dominant as Georgia's been, they are going to have some pretty tough narratives attached to them if they don't win the national championship. And that's just the way it goes. But the one thing that is just totally wired right now for Georgia is the recruiting game. Kirby's just got it absolutely on lock, especially in the state of Georgia, which produces a ton of talent. They get who they want. They go into Florida. They get guys out of there. They get some kids nationally. They're recruiting like nobody else is recruiting right now. So, you know, I just think as long as you are doing that and knocking on the door, one day you're going to break it down.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right, let's get to the games. I do want to ask, but let's start with Georgia-Alabama. That's the game you'll be at the SEC Championship. It looks like the spread's 6.5. Alabama has not looked good recently. I mean, they were dead in the water against Auburn. You got a freshman quarterback in the SEC Championship game where, you know, the scene is crazy. I just don't... Every time I watch Georgia, it's like, oh, the defense is great. I mean, you know, Dan, good offense always is going to be good defense. What are your thoughts on the game?
But the problem is Alabama doesn't have a good offense. That's the problem. Now,
what are they, on their fifth string running back?
They have a good... Obviously, Bryce Young is good and very talented. He's going to be playing in the NFL for a long time. But they've got real issues. Their offensive line has got problems. They don't protect very well. They don't really have a running game to speak of. They've got good receivers. But understand, their best receiver, Jameson Williams, is a transfer who left Ohio State because he couldn't really crack the top three at Ohio State. He was like the fourth guy. So, you know, that's kind of where they are. They don't have the same kind of skill players that they had last year. And they're young. You know, that's the thing. Alabama's, they're fine, but they're good by almost any other standard, but they're young and they're mistake prone. And this just is not the same kind of team. I don't see how they're going to be able to score against Georgia. Their offensive line was getting absolutely annihilated last week by Auburn, and Auburn's pretty good up front, but they're nothing like Georgia. So I actually think this game is going to be fairly ugly, and I think Georgia wins by a couple touchdowns at least.
Wow, couple tutty. All right, let me ask you, you know, and Dan, as I'm listening to you talk about how Michigan got back to its roots, smash mouth football, you know, Georgia's kind of doing the same thing. We're going to win with defense, and we're going to run the football. And in the era of the spread offense and everybody going four wide and hurry up and pace and tempo, is there something to zigging when everybody else is zagging?
Yeah, look, I think everything goes through cycles in football, especially what's hot right now. In 5 years, people adjust and change. But I do think fundamentally, whether you're running, you know, a spread or whatever you're doing, it is still a sport where the line of scrimmage matters. And you have to be good up front, offensive line and defensive line, I think, to win at the highest level. Even Clemson, you know, Clemson's never been known as some amazing offensive line program. But their formula when they won those couple titles is they were dominant up front defensively. I mean, they had just studs after studs on their defensive front, and they were good enough on the offensive line. You go back and watch those games against Alabama. They played really well up front in those moments. And why are they not as good this year? Because their offensive line isn't as good. So I still think that when you are trying to win at this level, what makes the difference, regardless of what system you're running, is whether or not you're able to block. And I think that's why you're seeing Michigan have this kind of renaissance, because their offensive line's playing great, and their defensive line, they've got two individual difference makers who can win one-on-one matchups.
All right, quickly to the games. Let me, hypothetical. Alabama shocks Georgia 21-20. Oklahoma State wins as well. Who gets to the playoff? A one-loss Alabama or a one-loss Oklahoma State?
I think Alabama is getting into the playoff if they win. No doubt about it. Alabama okay. and Georgia. Georgia's in. Georgia's not.
Georgia's a lock.
Georgia's a lock. They're in.
If Cincinnati Alabama, a lock, right? We're assuming they're going to win.
No, I think it could get complicated for them, but I think they're in great position. I think.
Wait, complicated if they win?
Yes. I mean, you have to remember, there's still a group of five team that does not have the overall schedule strength that these other teams do. They have the win at Notre Dame, which is great. And obviously the committee, after they beat SMU, was very impressed and moved them into the top four. I don't think they're totally safe. I think things could break wrong for them, but I don't think they will. I think Cincinnati will win and they will get in. I think more intriguing is, you know, what happens if Oklahoma State loses? Now you've got this issue with Notre Dame. They're kind of sitting there, but they don't have a coach. Does that impact, you know, kind of the way the committee looks?
Well, hold on. Michigan, we're assuming Michigan's going to win and they're in, right?
Yes, Michigan is if they win.
Georgia and Michigan, so we have is in. Cincinnati wins, we think they're in. That's three. So, and Alabama lost to Georgia, and it's Oklahoma State or Notre Dame, right?
I think that's what it comes down to, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, Dan, without looking, who's got the better win? Cincinnati, just the best win, Cincinnati or Oklahoma State?
Oh, Cincinnati's got the best win. Cincinnati won on the road at Notre Dame. Yep.
Okay.
Totally.
Because I look at the Oklahoma State schedule, I'm like, okay, you beat Texas, which stinks. You beat Baylor, which is good. You have to face Baylor again. Not a layup, but I mean, I like Dave Aranda. I think I like Baylor in this spot a little bit to cover the spread. I don't know about win. Where are you on that game?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to beat somebody twice in a season, and that was a competitive game. And Oklahoma State's got to come off the high of winning that Bedlam game, which is so important to them. You know, it's really hard in college football to get a team to emotionally peak 2 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. Very hard. I think very underrated as a skill. There's usually some kind of letdown. And if you're good enough to win, there's a lot of teams who can do that. But is Oklahoma State going to have the same edge this time that they had last week against Oklahoma or the first time around against Baylor? Definitely not a given. Yeah. But look, Oklahoma State does have some solid wins. And they play good defense and they've improved throughout the season. And if they win the Big 12, like, they're going to have a good argument.
Yeah. It's weird. We could wrap up with this. I didn't think Notre Dame really had any chance to get in. I was going to say like less than 1%, but an Alabama loss and an Oklahoma State loss.
Yeah.
And exactly. Notre Dame's in, huh?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what it comes out to. It's not going to take that much for Notre Dame to kind of backdoor their way into this thing. Even though, I mean, you look at their schedule, and there's not a lot there either. You know, usually the Notre Dame schedule is great, but some of those games just fell apart. You know, they North Carolina, preseason North Carolina was a top 10 team, and North Carolina turned out to be 6-6. So, you know, they got the Wisconsin win, but not much else. That's the problem.
Yeah, I didn't. All right. So who, any guess? And again, I'm not always holding you to anything, but your guess on the next Notre Dame coach.
Yeah. I mean, with the caveat that by the time people hear this, we may already know, but there's going to be a huge push for them to just hire Marcus Freeman, the defensive coordinator,
as a head coach.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the guy's extremely well-regarded. He would be a lock to be the Cincinnati coach. If Luke Fickell moves on, he would be Brian Kelly's trying to make him the highest paid defensive coordinator in the country at LSU.
Hold on, Dan. This guy's 35 years old and he's never been a head coach, and Notre Dame's going to make him their head coach? Is that just so they don't lose him?
I think it's possible. I'm not saying that's what they're going to do, but you know, you saw a lot of the stuff on social media from the players. They want him to be the guy. He's just got a lot of credibility and good recruiter, young, dynamic, charismatic, and the defenses he's been in charge of at Cincinnati and Notre Dame have been great. Like, there's people think he's a big time head coach in waiting. And if you believe in him, then why not? I mean, that's going to be the question.
Could you go steal a Fickell from Cincinnati, keep Freeman, Or would he just not do that? I mean, I don't know him at all, but do you think he's ready to be a head coach? Or I guess
that's
like not part of the discussion anymore in college football.
Like I mentioned, if Fickell decided to go to Notre Dame, which you know could be complicated because Cincinnati's going to be in the playoff probably, and Notre Dame's going to have to wait if that's the case. But if that were to happen, it would take Cincinnati like 5 seconds to hire Freeman as their head coach. So, you know, because he was there as the defensive coordinator. They know him there. And the only way he's staying at Notre Dame is if he's the head coach.
You think if they bring in Fickell or someone else, he's going?
Yeah, because he'll just go with Brian Kelly to LSU.
Wow, that's a tough spot for Notre Dame. I guess in that scenario, you got to make him the head coach, even though he's only 35.
Well, I don't know that they have to, but like they have a small window to make that decision. Let's put it that way. I think they're going to have to make that. I think they're going to make that call pretty quickly. And we'll see. Like Jack Swarbrick, I think, is going to have to, over the next 24 hours, you know, figure out if there's some other like big time guy that they could go get who would be a slam dunk. And if not, I think then they need to move pretty quickly to make Marcus Freeman the head coach.
Do you have any fun big name guys that they could go land?
No, not really. I mean, I think you could get Matt Campbell, but you know, does he fit into that category?
Is the bloom off that rose just a little, Dan? I thought they were disappointing this year.
They were disappointing. I still believe in him as a coach. I think he's really good. Like, I think he could win at Notre Dame. Can you sell that to the people you need to sell that to with him coming off kind of a mediocre year
and losing Freeman?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they can do that. If they can pull that off, but it's a tough call.
I mean, do you think there's anybody in the NFL that would step down to Notre Dame?
I mean, a head coach, probably not. You know, Dan Quinn, maybe. Somebody like that as a coordinator. I mean, I don't know. He's been in college. He was at Florida.
Yeah.
At Florida as a defensive coordinator. You know, some people think he'd be a really good college coach, really good on the recruiting trail.
Is Pete Carroll too old?
I think he's too old, yeah. I mean, I don't see it. I don't think Bob Stoops is coming out of retirement. Mark Stoops is off the market. He's going to extend with Kentucky.
I like when people get exotic and like the Brian Kelly thing's totally out of left field. I don't know if there's an NFL coach who would leave. I mean, Urban, we already talked about. Mike Tomlin, you know, a lot of change happened in Pittsburgh, although Mike Tomlin hates the idea of going back to college.
Mike Tomlin does not want to go sit in 16-year-olds' living rooms. And I mean, that's just obvious. He doesn't want to go recruit and, you know, try to convince these guys to come play for him. He wants to be an NFL coach. And if things go sideways in Pittsburgh, he would easily get another job somewhere.
All right, we've held you too long. Dan Wolkin, USA Today Sports. Read his stuff, follow him. He'll be at the SEC title game. Dan, thanks a lot. Enjoy the games. And I didn't ask you about the Heisman. Who the hell's winning the Heisman Trophy? Bryce Young?
I have no idea.
Does anybody care about the Heisman Trophy?
It's a weird year. I mean, I don't know. I don't vote for it, so I don't really think about it that much. But, you know, I did kind of have this thought this weekend. Like, if Georgia beats Alabama and a lot of points. Does Stetson Bennett maybe?
He's the best quarterback on his own team.
I know, but like, there's probably like 20 guys who are going to split votes, and some of them are defensive guys. There's nobody who's coalescing around a certain candidate yet, and maybe that's going to happen if somebody has a huge game in one of these conference championships, and if it's Stetson Bennett, the quarterback of an undefeated, dominant team, like I could see it. Yeah. I can see him kind of making a push forward at the last minute, but I don't know.
At that point, just basically say the Heisman's going to the best player on the best team. Like every year. I mean, come on. Because Bryce Young probably not beating Georgia, so I don't think you're going to give it to him off a loss. And then he's not even in the playoff. Heisman, crazy. Anyways, all right, Dan Wolkin. Thanks a lot, man. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Jason.